Hamish Megillot, make sure you have one of these. This is pretty much what we're going to be doing. Okay.
Where can you get a Tanakh?
Get a Tanakh. Okay, I have about 20 in my office, so maybe next time I'll bring one. But
should I just order it? Is there somewhere around here?
We sell them at the farm sale.
Isn't that in a month?
2 weeks.
Did you get me first?
All right. Before you spring for Tanakh, I have a bunch in my office, so I'll bring them in next class. All right. But today's going to be a lot of introductory stuff. It's good to own a Tanakh. All right. Chamesh Megillot. What puts these five together in one course? Yes.
They're all kind of short and getting soup.
Fair enough. There is an excuse like that for putting Treyasar into one book. Chamesh Megillot was not put into one book, but the first earliest reference to the books of Tanakh, it's probably the oldest bibliography known to the world. It's Bava Basra Daf Yud Dalet. It asks the question, what are the books of the Bible? It's an important question because at the time this was written, there were some attempts to stuff other books into our Tanakh, right? Notably by these new Jews who called themselves Nazarenes and wanted to stuff what they called afterwards the evangelical books of the New Testament into our Tanakh. Until the year 325, these Nazarenes called themselves Jews, right? In 325, that's a long time after Jesus lived. They made a clear break from Judaism, changed Passover to Easter, changed Saturday to Sunday, but until then they called themselves Jews. Right? Some wanted to maintain the mitzvahs, even circumcision and tefillin. Some wanted to take a full break, knowing that pagans were not going to buy into the circumcision stuff, and not going to buy into all these rituals, and keeping kosher, etc. So there we have that clean break. There's a Gemara that says that if you try to stuff more books into the Bible and you even read these books, it's considered a dogmatic avera for which you lose your olam haba. Right? last paragraph of the Sefer Sanhedrin lists afakoli isfarim hatitzoniim. Read these outside books, you lose your olam haba. All right. So the Gemara was interested in saying these are the books of Tanakh. Nothing else gets in. Right? There are 24 books. 5 books of the Torah, 8 books of Nevi'im, and 11 books of Pesukim. Okay? 5 Megillos are not listed together in that list. Right? The earliest bibliography does not know something called Chamesh Megillot. So I'm just going to tell you now, before I take the question, is that in only around the time of the Gaonim do we have the first signs of putting these 5 books together, because they are read at special times of the year. Got it? The only one that Chazal know about is Megillat Esther on Purim. Right? It makes sense to read Eichon Tisha B'Av. Right? The other 3, okay, it makes sense to read Rus on Shavuos. Right? Rus is all about the lineage of David. David was, according to tradition, born on Shavuos. None of this is in Tanakh. Right? Right, none of this is in the Gemara even. Right, but we read Rosh Hashanah, you all know. We read Shirashirim on Pesach. It speaks about the young, new sprouting love between a man and a woman, representing God and his new people, the new nation of Israel. And of course, what's left is Koheles for Sukkot. Right, was it fascinating when you read some of the very earliest references to why? What does Koheles have to do with Sukkot? Sukkot is Man Simchaseinu. Koheles is a very pessimistic kind of book. Right? So we're starting with Koheles today. So let me just consider that Koheles is like a workout in the gym. Anybody here enjoy the workout in the gym? Really? You do?
Yeah.
Like it's enjoyable, you feel the muscles, you feel it. Alright, but what you are doing in the gym, and I've run my share of marathons and I like to stay in shape. Alright? But what you're doing at the gym is you're breaking down something that's going to get stronger afterwards. Okay? So that's what Koheles does. Koheles is a day in the philosophical gym. It's going to break you down. It's going to... And you know, Chazal, this is interesting because there are 5 books that do the opposite of what I just said about the evangelical books. So Christians tried to stuff new books into our Tanakh, and the rabbis had to come down very hard. Don't do this. You'll lose your Olam Haba if you do this. You don't lose your Olam Haba for Avodah Zarah and Gilui Raos and Shefichas Damim, but you'll lose your Olam Haba not if you read the evangelical books. It's not, if you consider it part of Tanakh, it's not biblical. Right? There is evidence in the Talmud that some rabbis read the New Testament. By the way, they speak to the conversations they seem to have. Rabbi Gamliel asks what is clearly a Christian. Didn't your teacher teach you that he's not going to change the law of Moses, even like the top of the letter Yud? And there is such a verse in the book of Matthew. I come not to change the law of Moses, not like a jot or a tittle. And jot, you've heard of that saying? Not a jot or a tittle, right? A jot is a Yud. Okay? Right? J and the Yud, okay? The opposite is that of the 24 books of Tanakh, all right, you have the 5 Torah, the 8 of Nevi'im, all right, that everybody knows, Yeshua, Shofim, Shmuel, Malachim, Yishayahu, Yirmiyahu, Yechezkel, Trei Esar, 4 Nevi'im Rishonim, 4 Nevi'im Achronim. In Ksuvim, listen how you can remember it very easily, the order of the Ksuvim that we have in our Tanakhs today. It's Emet, spelled backwards. We call these three books Sifrei Emet because, by and large, except for the very beginning of Iyov, these books do not have storylines. They're not narratives. They're books about Emet, truth, life struggles, the vicissitudes of our existence. Right? I know I'm going to call you in a minute. I'm going to get you. And then we have the Chamesh Megillot, starting from the time that we read them during the year from Pesach. Shir HaShirim, Rut, Eicha, Kohelet, and Esther. Okay, that's 8. Just have 3 more. Okay, Esther takes place in which country? So does Daniel. Remember that. Okay, Daniel takes place in Babel and Paras, but it's okay. It ends in Paras. Daniel, Ezra, Nehemiah, which is considered one book, and then Divrei Hayyam. Okay, here's your way. So you get the Emet, the 5 Megillot, in the order in which we read them. Right? Pesach, Shavuot, Tisha B'Av, Sukkot, and Purim. And then just finish off the Neilas and Chemin Divrei Yomim, that, you know, the end of Tanakh. Okay? 5 of these books in Tanakh have the opposite phenomenon of the Nazarenes. We call them in Hebrew Notrim, because Jesus was from Nazareth. Not Bethlehem, Nazareth. Okay? The opposite phenomenon are books of the Tanakh where there are many attempts made throughout Chazal to banish them from Tanakh. Okay? All 5 of these books in various places scattered throughout Gemaras, Midrashim, and the like are attempts made by certain rabbis to consider that these books do not belong in the canon of Tanakh. Okay? The only one I'm interested in today is Koheles, because that's what we're starting with. I'll just tell you the reasons now, very quickly. Yechezkel contradicts the Torah dozens of times. Okay, what do you do when you have a contradiction? You take out your brisker thumb and you say, okay, this is this, this is that. Life is contradictory. Okay, if Yechezkel says in chapter 44 that a Kohen may not marry an Almana, that contradicts the Torah. Only a Kohen Gadol can't marry an Almana. Why does Yechezkel say a Kohen can't marry an Almana? And then he says, but he can marry an Almana of a Kohen. What? This is fabricated. Where does the Kohen can't marry an Amana, but he can marry a woman who was married to a Kohen who died? Where does it say that? Right? So, okay, I can give you a very creative answer to this. Okay, just if you want to know one place that collects all of these Yecheskelisms, you've heard of the Meshech Chachma, the Meir Simcha of Vinsk, Meshech Chachma, in Parshas Emor. Why does he do this in Parshas Emor? Is because Emor's Haftorah comes from Yecheskel 44, and a lot of the contradictions are in that Haftorah. So the Meshech Chachma lists a lot of the contradictions of Yecheskel, and then he resolves them. Meshech Chachma, Emor. Got it? Meshech Chachma is a parish to the Torah. But in some parshios, he says, you know, this Haftorah is so important, I'm going to comment on the Haftorah too. Okay, that's Yecheskel. Mishle, also contradictory. Mishle has internal contradictions, and it has external contradictions. It contradicts other wisdom elsewhere in the Tanakh. One pasuk in Mishle says, if you have something on your mind, find a good friend and talk to that friend about it. That friend will help you get it out of your system. Another pasuk in Mishle says, happy is the one who can hide his guilt and not let anybody know of what's bothering him. Alright, so there are lots of psukim like this in Mishle, where in one pasuk it says to do this advice, another pasuk it says that advice. Okay, good Shabbos. It depends on what's bothering you. Alright? Okay. And the Gemara is cared enough to resolve Mishle's problems. Okay. Has anybody here ever heard of a book called Mishle Ben Sira, The Wisdom of Ben Sirach? Right? You've studied it? You've take a course here on it?
I don't know if you should go to the page now.
Yeah, so in my intro class today, I used to teach a little bit about, it's called the Apocrypha. The Apocrypha, Svarim Chitzoniim. Right? So there is it's larger than our Mishle, but it reads just like it. In fact, the untrained ear, you wouldn't differentiate between the Mishle that's in Tanakh and the Mishle that's in Mishle Ben Sira, the Apocrypha. Right? So the rabbis cared enough to resolve the contradictions of the good Mishle, right? Shlomo's Mishle, but they didn't care enough to resolve what they considered to be ridiculous psukim and contradictions in the apocryphal Mishle. There's one rabbi in the Gemara who goes the extra mile. He said, look, you don't want it to be in Tanakh, fine, but my mother taught me how to learn Mishle Ben Sira, and it's a good book. We should learn it. That's Abaye. Right? Abaye, whenever Mishle Ben Sira runs into trouble in Shas, and there's one Tosfos in Erevin, Daf Samachay, that collects all of them. One big Tosfos, Batzar, Yigamaska Batzar, Samachay Maral, where all of the apocryphal quotations in Shas from Mishle Ben Sira appear. And Abaye, I don't know if it means he got his way, he didn't suggest it should be in the Bible. He just said that it's not a ridiculous book because of the contradictions. Just like you want to resolve the contradictions of this Mishle, my mother taught me how to resolve the contradictions of the other Mishle. Abaye was orphaned as a child and was adopted by Rabbah. Whenever he says my mother, he means Rabbah's wife. Okay, they call him Baba Nachmani because Rabbah was Rabbah Bar Nachmani. Anyway, so this Mishle here has lots of contradictions in it. Okay, but the rabbis chose to resolve them. Okay, now bear with me for 5 minutes. If Abaye felt Mishle Ben Sira is worth learning, so learn it. Learn it like Shakespeare, learn it like Homer, right? Learn it like there's lots of wisdom out there. And Mishle Ben David, the one that stays in Tanakh, so what's the difference between them? So it's a powerful question. I mean, there's wisdom here, there's wisdom there. It's just that I'll give one or two examples of this. There's a Gemara in Pesachim that says that when you have the four cups of wine on Pesach, you should try to get red wine. You probably heard that halacha. It's brought down in Shulchan Aruch. But why? Because blood? Right? Ramah says if you live in a place where the Christians accuse us of blood libels, use white wine. Don't ever use red wine. Right? Amazing. But the Ramah still says that red wine is preferable, and this is what the Gemara says, because there's a pasuk in Mishlei that says, do not be seduced by the redness of wine. Al tira yayin ki yit adam. Somehow red wine is more seductive than white wine. Did you know that? Who knew? But this is the pasuk the Gemara brings. Don't be seduced by the redness of wine. So red wine must be better than white wine. It's seductive. It grabs your attention. You know what I'm saying? You wouldn't do this with Mishle ben Sira. You wouldn't do it with Homer. The Gemara refers to Hamirus. They call it Hamirus. Hamirus is lots of wisdom. It's just, it's not biblical. What does that mean? What it means is that you wouldn't learn from it. You wouldn't. The Gemara would never cite a question, answer a question like this by quoting Hamirus or the Apocrypha. You get it? I'll tell you, the person I wrote my master's thesis for about 40 years ago, his name is Schneerlein, he's still alive. And that master's thesis we just actually published as a book called Conflict and Resolution in the Early Prophets. And he wrote his doctoral thesis at Yale in the 50s on canonization, the process whereby a book becomes holy in the Bible. And this is his chiddush in the book of what makes a book biblical, is that the rabbis were willing to cite it on examples. Like, he brings 100 examples. I just gave you one about the redness of wine. Right? I'll give you the other side of it. When the Gemara says that Mishle ben Sira is ridiculous, there's this ridiculous psukim, and rabbis cite the ridiculous psukim, and Abai said, no, you don't know what that pasuk is going. You should know what my mother said about this pasuk. You're not reading it properly. Right? Abai, remember. So, I would say the following. You're probably not old enough to remember, but I am. I went to the school right up the block. It's now Schottenstein Center. It was Yeshiva Soloveitchik when I went there. Teachers used to not just hit us, they would punch us. Right? Teachers got away with, they would smack you behind the ear. They would throw things at you. I have pictures in my mind of teachers punching a kid on the floor. Today, that teacher would be in handcuffs on before the day's over. Right? Hitting kids was acceptable 50 years ago. Right? But, when I became a parent, I wanted to read up on what's the best way to raise our children. You hear? And I was convinced that hitting kids is not the right thing to do. You don't lift a hand to them. You don't hit them with a stick. You don't hit them with a belt. And you don't hit your hand. You don't touch them. All right? There's a pasuk in Mishle that says, you probably know the English version of it, spare the rod and spoil the child, right? In Mishle, it's chosech shivto sonei beno. If you hold back the rod, you will hate your child. So, it's a pasuk in Mishle. How could I not hit my kids? Right? So, the fact that the rabbis chose to keep this book in the Bible, if it was Mishle ben Sira, then I'd say, Mishle ben Sira is not prophetic. It's not canonical. He thinks it's important to hit kids. Right? So, I'm either going to hit my kids, or I'm going to think this book isn't worthy, and I'm going to throw it out. I'm not going to throw it out, but I'm not going to pay attention to this particular verse. But if it's Mishle ben David, and it's in Tanakh, I'm going to go the extra mile, like Abaye, right, and say that the pasuk isn't talking about a rod or a belt or a hand. It's talking about discipline. Right? All child rearing experts say that we should discipline our children. It's just that in the last 50 years or so, the Eitza is don't discipline them with corporal punishment. All right. So I'm not violating Mishle by not hitting my kids, but I would be if I didn't discipline my kids. Okay? Anyway, that's Mishle's issues. Koheles is what we're up to, but I'm going to skip it because we're going to end with that. Shir HaShirim's problems is twofold. God's name does not appear in the book, like Esther. Plus, it looks on the face of it just like a love story between a lovesick man and a lovesick woman. what's the story? Where's the beef? What's in it? What? Right? Why is this in the Bible? Right? So, the answer that Rabbi Akiva gives in a Mishnah in Maseches Yodayim and Maseches Eduyot is that Shir HaShirim is a love story between God and His people, and it is the Kodesh Kodosh, the best book of Ksuvim. The rest of Ksuvim is Kodesh, Shir HaShirim is Kodesh Kodosh, because it teaches about the love of God for His people. Nice. Shir HaShirim stays in Tanakh because it's not just a love ballad between a man and a woman. Now, this, I think, Art Scrolls took to an extreme. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
It doesn't translate the words. Right? It takes what Chazal say these things mean. Okay, that's the intention, but you still have to say the mashma'ut of the words. Right? Rashi usually has a saying called Ein Mikrei Yotzei Midei Pshuto. It's in the Gemara. You have to read the pshat of a pasuk before you go anyplace else. But in Shir HaShirim, Rashi writes Ein Mikrei Yotzei Midei Pshuto Mashma'o. Mashma is more than pshat. Pshat is just, what do you mean? Some words can have different meanings. Mashma'ut means, and this I think is debated today about the U.S. Constitution. What is the verbal meaning of these words? Right? Mashma'o means that even if the pasuk means to say that when he's praising her shoulders and her thighs and her breasts and her legs and her nose and her forehead and everything else about her, right? That these things actually represent the two kruvim and the fine, but you can't just skip over the pshat and go straight to the kruvim, right? So in defense of Art Scrolls, they have the Shir HaShirim here. They have the translate at the bottom. They give the mashmaut translation. If you ever see an Art Scroll Shir HaShirim, okay. Right, so once Rabbi Akiva taught that Shir HaShirim is not just Stam, a story about a man and a woman lovesick for each other, so it stays in Tanakh. Right? Esther's problem is that there doesn't seem to be any prophecy in the book. There's no prophetic message. What's the message? Look under P in Encyclopedia Judaica for Purim, and you'll see there have been 200 such stories in our history. Where that city, and they give you the date, where that city reads the story of how they were saved. Right, this story is big because it's the whole kingdom, right? But what makes this special? What, there's any prophecy in this book? All right, so the Gemara goes out of its way at the Zion in the Sefer Megillah to show where all the prophecy is in the book, how you can only know certain things by prophecy, and therefore the Gemara says that it is worthy to remain. Just as an interesting side note, you've heard of the Dead Sea Scrolls, everybody here, right?
Cool.
Every book of Tanakh is very well represented in the Dead Sea Scrolls. We still have not found Esther. And we've pretty much exhausted whatever is in the Dead Sea Scrolls. We've interpreted it, we know what's in there, we know enough books have been written. We're not going to find it. Esther is not in the Dead Sea Scrolls. Neither is any reference to Hanukkah, by the way, but that is more understandable. People who wrote these scrolls were escaping the mainstream Hashmonai rulership in Yerushalayim to get away from them. All those scrolls and the whole community only lasted a few years, 3 or 4 years. Right? They were quite sure that the Geula was right upon them. Right? There is evidence they did not engage in marital relations because they were so sure Mashiach was coming right away that they didn't want to be tummy. They were hyper Torah, right? And they do not seem to have a well-developed Torah Shebaal Peh. Right? We have letters going sent back and forth about halachic discussions between the community in Yerushalayim. This is about like shortly after the Hanukkah story, 100 BC. Anyway, we do not have Megillat Esther there. Some have suggested because God's name isn't in Megillat Esther, but God's name isn't in Shir HaShirim either, and Shir HaShirim is well represented in the Dead Sea Scrolls. Okay? So let's talk about Kohelet's problems. Does anybody here know enough about Koheles to figure out why would a Talmudic discussion, and there's plenty written on this, think that Koheles is that doesn't belong? Yes.
It sounds like heresy.
Sounds like heresy. Devarav notet leminut. Devarav notin leminut. Drive you to heresy. Nothing to hope for, nothing to strive for. Right? Anything else?
It's very, very disparaging towards almost everything that exists. And very,
yes, it's depressing. This is what we need in the Bible. There's also another consideration is that it also is profoundly contradictory. On this, I told you about the Mashiach Chochma Yechezkel. On this, it's a very good collection. A very good collection of contradictions of Koheles. You've heard of Das Mikra? You know, Sadra Kuk's farm. The Das Mikra to Koheles has a whole series of the contradictions, internal contradictions of Koheles, and where Koheles might contradict something else that is considered canonical. Pasuk in Tehillim or something like that. Okay. Koheles has profoundly different attitudes towards the same thing. Okay, again I say good Shabbos. That's life. Life is contradictory. Life has sometimes it's a time for kaas, sometimes it's not a time for kaas, sometimes it's time for simcha, sometimes it's not a time for simcha. Okay, back to the question of Chamesh Megillot. Is in the time of the Gaonim, we're talking about, let's say, the year 900, we start to see references to reading these books, all five of them, different times of the year. And these are the times of the year. The reasons for reading them at this time of year. And therefore, they've started to become like a unit. Right? I'm sure you can buy, go into a farm store and say, I'd like a Chamesh Megillot, and you'll find them all by together. Plus, there's one final element that puts them together. You've heard of Medrash Rabbah? Right? There's Bereishis Rabbah. Medrash Rabbah is not really a unit. Bereishis Rabbah and Vayikra Rabbah are Tanaic, much older. Shmos, Bamidbar, and Dvarim Rabbah are much later. Rus Rabbah, for some reason, is considered the oldest of all 10 Rabbahs. Question?
Tanaic. Bereishis Rabbah is clearly later than Tanaic. There is that wrong.
I say Tanaic, it's also close. Tanaic and Eretz Yisrael. It has your Mishalmi kind of expressions, Mishalmi kind of names. So Bereishis and Vayikra are much, but the point is that it's older, much older than the other three. Rashi, for instance, uses four of the Rabbahs generously. Not once does he quote Bamidbar Rabbah. But he quotes in Bamidbar of a name of a person who he only quotes in Bamidbar. He says, Kach ra'iti b'yisodo she Rabbi Moshe Hadarshan. And whenever he quotes Rabbi Moshe Hadarshan, usually for a gematria, it's in Bamidbar Rabbah. So that's all kinds of, it leads to all kinds of conclusions, but I'm not going to get into too much of it now. But the Rabbahs do not appear at the same time. That's all I'm saying. Okay? They become a unit, 10 books at the time of the Gaonim. And the 10 books are Chamisha from the Torah and the Chamesh Megillah. So it's from the same genre of thought here. Someone thought of putting Midrashim together on these five books here.
Would they have to be related to the Moshe Darshan's after the Gaonim?
The Moshe Darshan is at the end of the time of the Gaonim, but before Rashi, he's about 970,
960. So, what means is it to say that it was put together in the set by the time of the Gaonim, but Midrash Rabbah is incited until afterwards?
When Rashi quotes Rav Moshe Darshan, and there are usually odd statements, Rashi quotes Rav Moshe Darshan that Ketores is Gematria Taryag. If you change the tes, I'm sorry, the kuf to a dalet, it's not a Rashi kind of thing to say. right? Kuf to Dal is Atbash, right? Kuf is the fourth to the end, Dal is the fourth to the beginning. And if you change the Kuf to a Dalid, Ditores is 613. If you know Rashi, that's such a not, it's such. But here too, this is a bit of a chiddush, is that Rashi becomes like the book he's commenting on. Rashi to Shmos is very different than Rashi to Bereishis. If you're a Ma'amar Sedra, you start reading Shmos and saying, who is this? This guy cares much more about Dikduk than he cared in Bereishis, right? And when you get to Bamidbar, he brings more gematria in Bamidbar than in the other four books put together. I understand, Bamidbar is a book of numbers. It's Chumash B'Kudim. Rashi becomes like the book he's writing on, right? And it could be that Rashi and Moshe Adarshan both got their material from a third source. It's not so. Usually, when we try to attribute and say this is where, if he doesn't quote it, this is where he got this, right? For instance, Rashi in Devarim, I can tell you this. Rashi in Devarim explains the psukim and an inordinate amount of time, like Targum Yonasan to the Torah. Whenever Targum Yonasan to the Torah, Darshan, the Pasuk you see is found in Rashi. That does not mean that Rashi got it from there. Both of them, whoever wrote the Targum Yonasan to the Torah and Rashi, could have both gotten it from a third source, and that's the scholarship. And yes, the Sifrei. Sifrei is meant for Shalacha to Dvar. Right? Rashi did not know, he never heard of Targum Yonasan to the Torah. He never quotes it in his whole parish to the Torah. But somehow in Devarim, Rashi is constantly darshaning what appears in Targum Yonasan to the Torah. Not three or four times, 70, 80 times in Sefer Devarim. Without ever quoting Targum Yonasan. Right? But the scholarship at least is that Rashi did not know Targum Yonasan to the Torah. First person to quote Targum Yonasan into the Torah is a student of Ramban, Menachem Harakhanati. Rishonim didn't know about Targum Yonasan into the Torah. Right? The Gemara doesn't know about Targum Yonasan. Targum Yonasan is to Nevi'im. Anyway, I'm only responding to that because of your objection. So let's get back to closing out the discussion of the Chamesh Megillot as a unit. Right, they're all canonized. The way they're in the Tanakh today, they're usually put together in the order in which we read them. Right, and the Rabbas, right, Bereishis Rabbah, Shmos Rabbah, they do not appear at the same time. Right, Vayikra Rabbah was in the hands of people to study before Shmos Rabbah was. That everybody agrees with. Okay. Right. So yes.
Why are we classifying these based on the time error? In other words, Esther, like you mentioned, happened way after most of the other, I think everything in Tanakh, but then somehow we classify the same category of the Chamesh Megillot. So why are we saying that the Midrash Rabbahs are?
All I'm saying is that the fact that Midrash Rabbah chose to present to us five books of the Torah, I understand that. So the Torah studied a lot. They didn't write on Yechezkel, they didn't write on Daniel Ezra Nehemiah, they didn't write on Tehillim, but they wrote on the Chamesh Megillot. Probably it emerges at the same time that people are reading them on these special holidays. You write a book that you want to be used, maybe to make money even, right? But you want a Habatzas HaTorah, so you're going to write on what people are reading. A lot more people want Midrashim on these books than these books, because these are read publicly in shul and certain times. So I want people want to know about them.
So Rishin, sorry.
So that's all. I'm just saying by the fact that Midrash Rabbah wrote Midrashim on these five books, which in the Gemara I mentioned before, in the beginning of class, seem to be five disparate works scattered throughout Ksuvim. I'm going to write the order of Ksuvim in the Gemara, see if you can figure out what is the basis of this order. Ready? Here it is.
Anybody getting it yet?
Time.
Yes, it's chronological. Okay. The Gemara discusses when Eov lived, gives nine different opinions, but apparently this Tana, it's a Braisa. This Tana holds that Eov lived somewhere between David and Shlomo. I don't know. Or maybe he lived earlier, but that he was pushed off for whatever reason. The Gemara gives that as a possible reason also. But yes, the order of Ksuvim in the Braisa is meant to be chronological.
Is Esther not in the order?
Esther's at the end. I didn't get that. The Braisa, when Rashi comments on this order of Shlomo's three books, he says, it seems to me that Shir HaShirim was written when he was old. Wow. Contradicting, that's in Shir HaShirim Rava, that he wrote Shir HaShirim when he was young. He wrote Kohelis when he was old. The Mishlei in middle age. So what is the order? What, if this is meant to be a chronological order, Rashi obviously felt it is, by saying, seems to me that he wrote Mishlei first, then Kohelis, and Shir HaShirim when he was old. Rashi is obviously, do you watch it with me? He's obviously understanding this to be a chronological order. Yes?
The hearing is that Hakama the Mishnah has an order that isn't,
what the Miri does there, and in his Hakama to Tehillim, is to suggest, he was aware of the Quran, that the order here is not a chronological order, at least of Shlomo's books. It's an order of... Yeah, these numbers.
Krokim.
These order of size. The Quran, if anybody ever opened one, has such a disparity. It's like Sefer Hasidim, or Yudah Hasidim. There's no logic to what's going on in the Quran. What is the order based on? Size, sizes of the surahs. That's it. And it was quite common to do that in the ancient world. Right? In fact, one very, very familiar source of ours has that as its common basis. There are some exceptions, namely
Mishnah.
Shas, yeah, Mishnah. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, the order in Moed is Shabbos, 24 prakim. Erevin, 10 prakim. Sukkim, 10 prakim. Yuma, 8 prakim. Sukkah, 5 prakim. Rosh Hashanah, I know in some Shas's it says Rosh Hashanah, Yuma, Sukkah. That's not the order in Shas. Right? There's some exceptions to this. Makkos comes after Sanhedrin and before Shavuos, even though Sanhedrin is 11 prakim, Makkos is 3 and Shavuos is 9 prakim. Yeah, the Gemara seems to be sensitive to this when it says that Makkos is the continuation of Sanhedrin. Right?
Zeroyim seems to be two halves.
And yeah, Zeroyim basically follows this. Moed follows it very well. Right, but you see that at most of the time, if you look at all the six Shisha Sidra Mishnah in a chart, and you see the sizes of the prakim of each of the prakim, usually you see it at a Shiva home, that you see the sign up for a Mishnah, right? You see the amount of prakim, they want you to know how big the prakim are. In Taros, it's very Kalim, and then Ahilos, and the Gaim. So that seems to be the order here, basis. It's not telling you the chronological order of Shlomo when he wrote these books. I'd rather go, Shir HaShirim looks like a book of youth. Mishlei, middle age, Kohelis is, that's an old man writing this book. The first Targum to Kohelis says, when Shlomo looked over his life and contemplated where all the work he put into the world and where it was going, and that he wasn't giving his kingdom over to any worthy son. For goodness sakes, he had 300 wives and 700 concubines, and he didn't find one worthy son. What we do know is the son that he did give his kingdom to, his name was Rechavam, right, was a Shlub. Right? And he was the son of a woman not born Jewish. Namah Amonis. Right? I'm sure that every one of those 300 or maybe 1,000 women spent every moment of their days trying to convince Shlomo that their son should be the next king. Right? Like David's wives. So we don't have fewer. So I understand Shlomo wanted to make peace. He was the son-in-law of perhaps every king on earth at the time. But the... Kohelis, the first, like I said, the first paragraph to Kohelis speaks about him writing this book because he looked at his old age. What did I do all this for? While I'm on the topic of Targum, just be aware of the fact that the Gemara in Megillah Daf Gimel says that Onkelos wrote the Targum to the Torah, Yonason wrote the Targum to the Nevi'im, and there is no Targum to the Ksuvim. Remember the reason the Gemara gives why there's no Targum to the Ksuvim? It might reveal Mashiach's arrival. Right? Now, if Mashiach's arrival is not clear in the Torah, why do we think it would be clear in Tanakh? Why do we think it would be clear in Targum? Because that's what Targum does. Sometimes he goes more than just the verbal translation of the Hebrew words into Aramaic. Sometimes he explains things. Well, that's on steroids in Chamesh Megillot. Right? The first Targum to the first pasuk in Koheles, Divrei Koheles Ben David, is this long Targum, 10 lines. Why Shlomo wrote the book, right? That's not in the pasuk, right? That's typical of Targumim in Chamesh Megillah. Question?
If you can't read Hebrew and you just read the Targum Kohelet, you would think that it's like a nice, firm writer. This is just a kind of strange style sometimes. It completely rewrites the book.
In the Chinami, you'll find that in some of the other books too. The first Targum in Rus, for instance, talks about 10 ra'avs that have been in the world. And then ends with Lo ra'av lalechem v'lo tzama l'mayim v'kim nishmo es divrei Hashem. Where is that in the pasuk?
But it's
typical. You'll see it in all of the Chamesh Megillot. Who are the 60 giborim around the bed of Shlomo HaMelech? Is the 60 letters of Birchas Kohanim.
Like Ma'aseh Melech called Shamesh, or inserts the drash about, but.
I'm not disagreeing with you. That's the point I'm trying to make. Okay, so I'll just close today's presentation with the major point we'd like to make from Koheles is what makes the book so compelling, and how he shares this in common with Socrates. Is that the pinnacle of wisdom, is a book of wisdom after all, is to recognize the limitations of wisdom. Okay? That's it. Amarti echkin lab imrucho kamen lab. Is that this book does draw this conclusion later. In the beginning he says, my chokhma just made me more miserable, and it ruined everything I looked forward to. That's a very important element of Koheles. Is a pasuk that you may be more familiar with because it's in Tehillim. Reishis Chochma Yiras Hashem. And I'll show you next class, that I will define Yiras Hashem as morality. Morality born out of an intellectual pursuit. That it is intellectually, you have the intellectual high ground to recognize the limitations of the intellect. Right? Okay, that is very well represented in Socrates, in the Republic, in Plato's Republic. Okay, Shlomo may have waited too long to figure this out. Right. The fact that he made a room of gasping people think that he actually has the right to cut a baby in half is his undoing. Of course, we know he never intended to do so. But the fact that he even suggested it, and the people in the room made no objection.
Well, wasn't it? It was to find a real mother.
Determine the real mother, I know, but you can't. A heavenly voice comes out and says, split the kingdom if that's what you think you can do. Look, you know there's a story in Tanakh of a king who wants someone's vineyard and he refuses to give it to him. So his wife, a Sidonite princess, arranges for false testimony that the man cursed the king and blessed God. They're so firm, they don't want to say cursed, but divine God. So they say he blessed God. And why didn't she? Come on, you're the queen, you're the king, just take it. Take the stupid field, you're king. No, even idol worshippers, these are terrible people, Ahab and his wife Jezebel. But they know that they have, even when they're doing something against the law, they have to, that the people wouldn't stand for a violation of Chok U'Mishpat. She arranged for someone to accuse him of false testimony. That's also against Chok U'Mishpat, but that people don't know that. They thought they were killing a man who really deserved to die. Right? We'll start this next, but Shlomo seems to violate this by making people think he has the right to kill this baby. That goes too far. Maybe that's the connection. It's the Haftorah of Parshas Miketz, when it's not Hanukkah. Hardly ever read it. The Miketz is almost always Hanukkah. So that Haftorah is superseded. But when it's not Hanukkah, we read about Shlomo with the two women and the baby together to parallel Yosef. And because it appears that Yosef also went overboard, waiting so long to tell his father where he was. Okay, we'll talk about that next time. Limitations of Chochmah, limitations of power, limitations of Malchus. Shlomo learns that later in the book, right? And we'll talk about it next class. Okay, guys, did I get everybody here? Did anybody come in late? Isaac Fold?